Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. I'm Matthew Cos. That's Robert Mackowitz. Figured I'd try just a very more formal intro. How you doing, Bob?
I felt good.
Yeah.
Who calls me Robert? Landsberg calls me Robbie. And Keith Pelly used to call me Robert when we used to work together at TSN. Not too many people do, though. I'm not really a Robert. I'm not classy enough. Also, that's like an English name. I'm more of a Bogdan for my Ukrainian heritage.
Yeah, Robert, there is a formality to that.
Totally.
Yeah.
King Robert of Scotland.
I wonder how many people are actually called Robert. Like, I don't think I know any. I think anyone I know, it's just Rob.
Robert's a bit like William. Where you think, what's your story?
Yeah.
You think you're better than me?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. My one friend, Bill Eppner, is technically it's Willie, but no one calls him William.
And if you call him William, it feels like you're either in trouble or you're in trouble.
Yeah, that's basically it.
We got a ton of sports to get to today, but I wanted to point out before we roll further, I like to do Christmas updates from around your place, like how the place looks, because if anyone who's never listened before, I believe, but...
Welcome.
You're welcome. Nice to have you. Matt's girlfriend, Amy, for every holiday goes all out for whatever the theme is. Like Patrick's Day, Valentine's Day, Halloween, whatever. And so you can imagine, you know, Christmas is Christmas around here. So I counted eight Christmas trees. A lot of people couldn't do eight Christmas trees in one room.
We've proven them wrong, Bob. We have proven them all wrong. We got one real one. Everything else is fake and smaller. But I will say we are happy. The real Christmas tree, this might be our best one ever. It is big. It is luxurious. We're very thrilled with this one.
The real Christmas tree, the centerpiece here, is just fantastic.
Yeah.
No, you guys did a good job. Your place is very...
Thanks.
It's always hospitable. It's always warm. You do a good job of having people over, Matt. You're a class act.
I'm a classy fellow with a capital K.
You smell good. You comb your hair. You're classy.
Classy all around.
I love it. You got anything you want to get into before we do sports?
Is Christmas the fullest season of the year?
Do you mean like food full?
Food-wise, yeah. Because just so many, like it just came off another family, like Christmas brunch thing on Sunday. And what I really like is my nephews and I now have a contest to see who can eat the most shrimp. And it's a very fun thing. But, you know, you wake up the next day and you're just so full and so lethargic and just... Yeah, like it feels like this is the full season, isn't it?
The actual day, Thanksgiving, is more of an eating day than Christmas.
Right.
But the season for Christmas, because you're indulging the whole time. You know what I think sums it up? Shortbread cookies. When does anyone eat shortbread cookies over the course of the year? Would it ever be July and you have shortbread cookies?
No, never.
But it gets colder and you're about 2 weeks out of Christmas. And next thing you know, you've got five shortbread cookies next to you with your cup of tea.
That and bread pudding.
I don't do bread pudding, Matt, because I don't belong to the National Club.
I had bread pudding yesterday at Islington Golf Club. So very different.
What clubs do you belong?
I'm only a member of one. The other one is my stepdad, Sesto. I don't golf. Last time I golfed was like 1991. I haven't golfed, since 1991. It's been a while.
Got a picture from Jeff Pollock yesterday.
Nice.
He's dressed up as Santa. And then I sent one of me. This so ironic. I'm such a contrarian. The only time I ever dressed up at Santa was at my kid's school, and it was the one time I was skinny.
you did. It looked odd. Skinny Santa.
I'm skinny Santa. I spend my whole life actually looking like Santa, and the one time I dress up as him, it's like, take that, kids.
I have a thought on that, but first, our sponsor is Jeff Pollock. He is our lawyer. If you need a lawyer, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. And I don't trust Hot Santa. I hate it when they do these at malls where they got like Santa, but he's all ripped, or, you know, it's like just a dude who's got that, you know, the good beard and the strong jawline. I don't want skinny Santa. Santa needs to be jolly, and that doesn't look like jolly. That looks like a guy who avoids all carbs.
Santa, exactly. See, that's it. That last thing you said is exactly it. See, Santa is the spirit of abundance.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Claus, the spirit of abundance. And we all have this fantasy. It's a little bit hip-hoppy. It's got like a Notorious B.I.G. to it. It's Notorious S.A.N.T.A. The idea that you are the one who is the, you've got success, worldly goods, and...
built for comfort, not for speed.
As the great Howlin' Wolf used to say. Yeah, the second, you know, it's really weird. It's kind of like, you know, you can have Santa walking around with no shirt on, like Vladimir Putin, trying to show off his abs and how tough he is.
Yeah.
Santa's supposed to be... what's the right word for it? Rubenesque?
Rubenesque, corpulent?
Corpulent sounds a little morbid. I kind of like Rubenesque because there's a sort of a, just a playfulness to it.
Santa looks like he's always having a good time. Santa, you know what? He's not he's not denying himself. You look at Santa moving around, he's not denying himself. He wants that bread pudding. He wants that shrimp.
John Gotti.
And
everybody's cannolis.
Yeah.
Watching a John Gotti thing on Netflix. So that's what I'm thinking about. He gave gifts to everybody, except for the guys he killed.
Well, that's a gift as well.
The gift of heaven.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about hockey and basketball. And I really want to get into the OKC San Antonio game from the other night, the semifinal of the NBA Cup. But before I do that, it was a very interesting week in a lot of ways in the NFL. I want to go through a couple individual games, and then I have a big picture question that I really want to sit back and let you cook on, okay?
Yeah, well, the NFL, I mean, the Mahomes injury is crazy.
Well, and we'll get to that in just a second. I want to park that for just a moment because I want to talk about Baltimore beating Cincy yesterday. 24-0. They're now at 7-7. They're a half a game out of first place in the AFC North. The Steelers play tonight against Miami, and they could be tied by the end of tonight. Lamar throws two touchdowns. They sack Burrows three times. Huge pick six. Derrick Henry runs for 100 yards. And they actually look good. It's kind of who you think Baltimore is going to be. So I wanted to start here because this team, I can't remember in recent memory a team that's gone through so many opinions of it over the course of 14 games.
The Ravens are weird. Remember at the beginning?
They're so weird.
The beginning of the year, they had that massive lead over the Buffalo Bills. Yeah. And they, you know, Derrick Henry's ripping off long, long runs, but it didn't matter.
They looked unstoppable.
They looked unstoppable. And then Buffalo came back to win. And that's kind of been the Ravens for a lot of the year, where you think they're going to be dominant. And then you look at the score at the end, like, why aren't they winning?
There was the previous season where there was that crazy Hall of Fame game that started the whole season. And they lost it on the final play. And there was that crazy end zone catch against the city.
Yeah.
And that sort of set the tone, which is, this is going to be a weird year. But they all seem to be weird years. What is it about the Ravens? Is this what happens when you name your team after a story by Edgar Allan Poe? They seem haunted, Matt.
By the way, off topic, but with the Edgar Allan Poe thing, a guy that I was like, Dave Damashek, who's a big Pittsburgh Steelers fan, a week ago when the Steelers were taking on the Ravens, and he's telling everyone, well, you got two choices. The Steelers were named after the people, the workers in the factories that built the tanks to defeat the Nazi scourge, as he put it, or you can root for the Ravens. Basically, Edgar Allan Poe was a drunk who moved to Baltimore, then died young, and was apparently not a very nice person. Like, it was a very funny way to contrast who are you going to root for, the drunken poet or the guys who defeated the Nazis?
Quick sidebar. I've always thought you had a lot of Dave Damashek in your game.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of like you, but American.
There are certain, you know, listen, who doesn't love ranking fruit? It is, you know, ranking produce is one of the number, it's a bedrock of doing sports radio.
We're going to do Chinese food later.
Yeah.
This is he's a lot like we used to be on the air. I think he took it even further, though. Mm-hmm. We still pretend it to be about sports.
He hasn't. My favorite was he would ask people in the Super Bowl, is this a must-win game? It's a good bit.
That's really cheeky. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Anything to say about Baltimore, though? Because, again, we go back. We talked about this a few weeks now. I feel like we've got a bit of a runner going here, which is, will there be a team, either KC or Baltimore, that has some crazy year and then winds up being dangerous in the playoffs? And it's clearly not going to be KC. Again, we'll get to that in a moment. I'm starting to think if I'm in the AFC, I don't want to face Baltimore. And 6 days ago, I wouldn't have said that.
Everyone in the AFC, to your point, is rooting for the Miami Dolphins to win tonight. Because no one is afraid of Pittsburgh. Everyone will be afraid of Baltimore. And the funny thing is, Lamar Jackson has so many bad playoff games. He is the Matthews, Marner, Nylander of the NFL, but yet they do. They scare you because the ceiling is a lot higher. Everyone knows who the Steelers are. Everyone knows that the Steelers, if they make the playoffs, they're going to lose in the first round. It's destiny.
The Ravens, spooky team that they are, have won four straight road games. So if they make the playoffs, it's not like they're afraid of being on the road. They seem to prefer it this year. I can't figure them out. I've stopped trying to figure them out. I don't have to figure out Kansas City, Eddie. Shall we just dive into that?
Well, the dynasty's over. It's been a remarkable run. Every year that he's been a starter, Patrick Mahomes has made it the AFC Championship game. They won three Super Bowls in that 5-year run. They're one of the main reasons why Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Kyle Shanahan don't have Super Bowl rings, even though all of them, their individual levels of greatness cannot be denied. It's weird that only is Kansas City's not going to make the playoffs. But now we don't know when we're going to see Mahomes.
It's unfamiliar. Yeah. Not weird. I mean, all things end.
But with Kansas City, this one felt like it had the longest runway to it.
Well, and Mahomes isn't old.
No, he's not. He's turned 30.
Right. So even if the team around him was, you know, long in the tooth, or guys come in and come out, and, you know, we talked about Chris Jones not being the same Chris Jones. But when you're the greatest quarterback in the world is 30 years old, you think you've got at least 7 or 8 years more opportunity. But it doesn't feel like that, does it? It feels like this isn't a recalibrate. This is a rebuild.
This is a rebuild. And I was doing this from my opening thought. The Patriots, they actually went 10 years without winning a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And when Tom Brady got injured to begin the 2008 season, they still didn't win a Super Bowl until 2014, Seattle, the Russell Wilson interception in the end zone. And what buoyed New England was they drafted well. You know, between Super Bowls and the Brady injury, that's when they drafted Gronkowski, their entire offensive line, Deontay Hightower, a bunch of really good other good linebackers and such. And that's the question with Kansas City. Can you draft and develop? Because you're not going to have to do that. You know, you had the first run. Chris Jones is in his early 30s. Kelsey could retire. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. I mean, they always had the advantage of they have Mahomes. But then the only question with Mahomes is, when he comes back, you know, 30, 31 years old and the ACL, what's his mobility going to be like? Because you lose that mobility, you got to reinvent yourself as a quarterback.
What's so crazy about the NFL is if they win two more games this year, and there were a lot of close games this year, two more games, we're not talking about rebuild, not recalibrate, rebuild. We're talking about possible Super Bowl run. The NFL is so merciless and the margins of error are so thin.
It's cruel. Oh, yeah. Kansas City was a chance to go to the Super Bowl for the first time. We haven't seen it since the Bills, where a team went to the Super Bowl four straight times. Right. And if you're Josh Allen, you know, now you're looking at it going, huh, there's no Patrick Mahomes. There's no Joe Burrow. There's a chance there's no Lamar Jackson. It's going to be C.J. Stroud, Drake May, Trevor Lawrence, Bo Nix. It's a very different set of quarterbacks in the AFC.
So let's go over to Buffalo then, because at 21-0, I was having lunch with my mom, and I thought I'll stay to the end of the half. But as soon as it went to 21-0, Pats over the Bills, I said, I'm going to get gone, and I'm just going to do some Christmas shopping. And it was one of those games that you've given up on, and then you start following online, and you realize I may have made a terrible mistake. Two halves, Maddie. First half, 24-7 for the Pats. Second half, 28-10 for the Bills, and it winds up 35-31. You're a Super Bowl historian. Let's say the Bills make it to the Super Bowl. Can you think of another time when a team made to the Super Bowl based on the talent of one single person?
It's hard to come up with an answer. Buffalo has allowed 30 points or more four times.
See, because it's not just on offense.
And they're 4-0 in those
They
games.
Don't even have a great defense. So they're mediocre at best on defense. They give up a ton of points. He's got no wide receivers. The running game, James Cook. In fairness, James Cook's very good running game.
James Cook is great, does fumble, but...
But when we're talking about, like, this is, you know, there's this quote after the game, if you have Josh Allen, anything is possible. And usually that's bullshit. But this actually seems to be true. And the fact is, they're crushing teams in the second half. The first half, they, you know, play them more or less to a draw. But over the course of the season, in the second half, they annihilate teams. And it feels, it's kind of like he's the anti-Austin Matthews in the sense that Josh Allen looks around and says, nope, we're not going to lose today. We won't be doing that. And he just decides to win, and they do.
It's crazy. I said before this game, I said a week ago, give him the MVP. Drake May and Matt Stafford, like, they should not. No, I think May.
Well, Drake May really took a hit yesterday.
Yeah, Drake May will, but Matthew Stafford is still going to be the favorite. Imagine Buffalo with Puka Nacua. Imagine Buffalo with, like, Kobe Turner, the great defensive lineman for the Rams. It's a completely different conversation. They've given up 185 or more rushing yards six times this year, and they've won four of those games. Like, it's crazy. It's like the rest of the team is actively trying to lose, and Josh Allen won't allow it. Like, and Josh Allen might not win the MVP, but I think this is his most remarkable year, what he's doing out there. It's incredible. And by the way, I've been stretching my brain trying to think of it. The one that comes to mind, the team that, you know, the one player dragging to the Super Bowl, might be 1984 Dan Marino.
That's the only one I could think of.
You know?
But he had good receivers.
He did, Mark Duper and Mark Duper. But then the question is, you know, how much it was them versus how much it was Marino. But,
sure, but you can't look at anybody. Can you say, no, you know, you're right. Like Keon Coleman and, you know, Elijah Moore?
Yeah, and you know, Khalil Shakir is their best target, and yeah.
Well, Luke Wilson on TV the other day is saying, I think Brandon Cooks is going to be the answer for this team. The guy was released by the Saints.
Brandon Cooks still doing it, still out there. I
drafted him this year.
Did you?
Well, because I thought, you know, because I got him for a buck.
Okay.
And I thought, you never know.
Yeah. Okay.
Because he's still doing it.
He's still doing it.
Yeah, not anymore.
No. He is watched. And yeah, so like for Josh Allen, here's the shame. He has his worst team around him, but this is the weakest the AFC has ever been.
Honestly, I'm not ready to bet against the Bills, even though I literally walked out on them yesterday after 21 zip. You know, there's a lot of Christmas shopping to do, Matt, and you can't waste it on a blowout.
No.
You got to take the opportunities when they arise. But your points are really good. I mean, the Broncos beat the Packers yesterday, and so the Broncos feel pretty legit.
Yeah, they are. It's because people don't trust Bo Nix, and I get it.
In fairness, he's a young guy who makes a lot of mistakes.
Yes. Though, here's the number one reason to bet it all on Denver. They have, the last 2 years, they've got two of the best sack differential seasons. And basically that just means how many sacks did your defense has created versus how many times has your quarterback been sacked. You put those numbers together, and the more plus it is, the better, obviously. So Denver has two of the best in the last 25 years of sack differential. They sacked the quarterback a ton, and Bo Nix isn't getting sacked. That's the argument for why Denver feels like they could legitimately get out of the AFC.
I mentioned last week, I should say, that I thought Denver was legit. But in the AFC, I don't know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
What does legit even mean? Does it mean that you have a chance? I mean, Trevor Lawrence throws five touchdowns yesterday. Like, is he ready to take a step up? Or the Jags are 10-4, and their quarterback just had his best career game ever, a number one draft pick that everyone's been waiting on. Are they legit? I don't know. The Bills, look at the conversation we just had. They have the best football player on the planet, but they are kind of shit in a lot of other areas. It's the point about the AFC being wide open is so true. This must be crazy for gamblers because there are just no sure things.
None. And Trevor Lawrence, three straight games without a turnover. First time he's done that in his career.
Hot Jags talk
is back.
I feel myself, you know, hoping that the AFC title game is going to be the Bills and the Jags.
That would be a ratings disaster. But it absolutely could be.
It'd be fun quarterback play, though. Hopefully.
If they don't do it, like, it's funny. I was trying to think who's got the most pressure on them right now. And I was thinking, like, Tristan Jarry, or Yari, whatever, the goalie got traded to Edmonton. But there's so much pressure on Josh Allen, and it's not fair. You know, it's like, oh, you better do it now.
Did we call him the load-bearing wall last week? Because he is that.
Yeah. Oh, I did. Hodor.
Hodor
from Game of Thrones.
Oh, my God. That's the best comparison ever. Okay, so this is a good spot for me to do my macro conversation because if there's one thing that defines the NFL this year, it feels like flux, that there are no things that are certain and things that we used to know are no longer as true as they used to be, chief among them. So here's my question for you. Are we on the cusp of a new era for the NFL? If the old era was the Chiefs and the Bills and the Niners, and to an extent, the Rams, certainly the Eagles, teams that we expected to be there, they're still kind of there. Like all the teams I mentioned are still good, but they're not locks anymore. They're not sure things. And there's other teams, Seattle, Denver, you know, maybe even the Jags, who knows, but teams that are bubbling up. Does it feel like we're on the precipice of a changing of the guard?
what it feels like, I don't know if changing of the guard, because I don't know how much I trust the new guards.
Well, that's a big part of it too.
Yeah.
The other side is limbo. It's either a changing of the guard or it's limbo. What do you think is more likely to happen?
Well, I mean, I think it's changing of the guard because that always happens. But we are entering a time of, as you said earlier, of uncertainty. Mm-hmm. There is no truly great team. It should be the Eagles on paper, and yet they've just been an absolute misery. Now they smack the Raiders, but the Raiders are horrible. Seattle is great, but we don't fully trust Sam Darnold. We love the Rams, but Matt Stafford is very old, and we don't know how much longer he's going to have in him. You know, and then the AFC side, Joe Burrow sounds like Andrew Luck. The Ravens are up and down. There is no more Patrick Mahomes. It could be Denver. Like if Bo Nix doesn't have to be a star, but it could be the Broncos, because at the very least they have a good coach and a great defense and enough on offense.
If it was the Broncos in Seattle in the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. in terms of football logic, it would make sense based on the season we've seen.
Yes.
But when you think about narrative logic, that would make no sense. It would feel like a totally new NFL. It would feel like a mistake.
Yes, it would feel like a weird year, a blip.
But my argument would be it's not a blip, though.
No.
Because the other teams would feel just as weird. It's just that we're used to them.
There is no, right now, there is no traditional. Unless the Eagles get back, maybe Eagles-Buffalo would feel maybe the closest to traditional. But I think it's just going to be a weird year that whoever wins the Super Bowl, I don't think will be considered a great team. Like when the Steelers beat Seattle, when the Steelers beat Arizona, you know, those two times, the Steelers, good on them. It's a hell of a one organization.
Yeah, they're the best team in a down year.
Yes. Bingo. That's exactly it.
But it does feel like some of these younger teams are finally getting better. Led by Denver, I think, uh-huh. and the sack differential stat that you threw out there is a good indication, but they're extremely well coached.
Yes.
They have a quarterback who's at least good.
Uh-huh.
How great is he? We don't know yet, but he's going to be tested, and he seems to rise to the occasion. That's one thing you like about Bo Nix, is that when the game is big, he doesn't shrink.
Against Kansas City and against Philadelphia, he came up big late. So, yes. It's funny. There is a lot of Bo Nix slander. It feels... I think part of it is people don't like Sean Payton. They don't like Sean Payton, so they just, you know, throw their slings and arrows at Bo Nix, because really it's attacking the coach.
Sean Payton has one of my favorite coaching quotes about modern sports, and he said that all teams are extremely prepared, the players are extremely fit, and everybody knows what the other side is going to do, and our job is to create confusion. And that to me feels like sports in the modern world. Like, you certainly see it in hockey. The faster it gets, the better coached these guys are. You know, the idea that you're just going to grind them down, you know, it's, I guess, sometimes true. But what's more true, especially in football, is that it's your job to do something they didn't expect. Because if you do something they expect, they're so well coached and prepared, they will stop you.
Well, it's, you know, the fourth down revolution from a couple of years ago with Dan Campbell.
That's a good point.
No one expected it. And, you know, Detroit... You know, they went 15-2 last year.
Push. Uh-huh. Like, we're in an age now where everybody's gotten so good at the game itself that it's an age of innovation.
I love that the NFL, the age of innovation is the most barbaric, simple play. Just cram all the men together and push.
Well, and the funny thing is, this doesn't always work, which is why passes are so short these days. Because in the absence of innovation, you can always dink and dunk your way down the field. Not everybody can do this. It's hard to confuse the other side. But what you can do is you can play safe, go for 5 yards at a time, and just incrementally wind your way down, which is actually, as much as I say it's an age of innovation, one of the reasons the game feels a little boring is because they are so well prepared that your only recourse is to play it safe and take small margins of wins.
Well, it's funny. It's play it safe, but also everyone's going for it on fourth down now. It's a weird thing where both things are almost happening at once.
Trevor Lawrence throws for 5 touchdowns yesterday. He's 20 for 32 and 330 yards. And 10 years ago, 20 for 32 and 330 would have been an okay day for a quarterback.
Yeah, it is weird. It is down right now. Like all the, it's, you know, playing fantasy football, you can sort of sense it. Like all the numbers are down. The 5,000-yard passer.
Not completion percentage.
No, completion, yeah. Football's better when the completion percentage is lower. But the average yards per pass is higher. That's the sweet spot. You know, it's like baseball to me is better with more triples and fewer home runs.
The problem with every sport is when you figure out how to play. when you come up with solutions,
oh yeah,
of course you're going to use them. Your job is to win.
It's been a theme on this show, and we've done
many
it a lot.
We've
it's
done
just
it a lot.
Smart ruins sports.
That's why we're so important.
Yeah. It's smart's the worst. You know, I want alcoholic owners making ridiculous trades and just everyone throwing the ball all over the place. And you know, in baseball, no more walks.
Bill Guerin, GM of the Minnesota Wild, making meatballs for his Christmas dinner. And he gets the call, let's roll the dice and deal for Quinn Hughes. Even though Quinn Hughes is never going to play hockey in Minnesota anymore. Yeah.
I loved when, you know, that was one of the first questions, you know, would you be open to signing here? He's like, yes, I'd be very, he said, very open, which is what he has to say. But by the way, on the Quinn Hughes thing, now, one of the main reasons what I'm going to say is because there's only seven Canadian teams, so the opportunities are less. Can you think of a time where a star player said, I want to be in Canada?
Does John Tavares count?
Tavares does.
Okay, so Tavares for
sure. So Tavares for sure.
McDavid's an example.
McDavid was drafted and he signed.
He had a chance to leave.
No, I know. I know he had a chance to leave.
I think he chose Edmonton. I think he's trying to choose Edmonton, but he's saying, look, don't fuck me around. Give me a team to work with.
It just, you do hear all the time players go, oh, there are no trade clauses. It's all Canadian teams.
I think Winnipeg feels this. I think Ottawa feels this.
I think most
of Toronto feels it. Yeah, absolutely. There's no question.
I always say it's the hardest. It is harder to be a GM of a Canadian hockey team than.
Well, the Wild aren't so far off of that because they're pretty far north. Like they're much further north than Toronto is.
And by the way, what was the tax they had to pay? Kaprizov, they had to give him the most money.
Right.
So that's the tax.
You know, he was saying about Quinn Hughes why he might want to stay here. You know, in Minnesota, it's like, well, he's a hockey nut and he loves it. He watches all the games. And you're going to want to play where the best hockey is. Sure, you can play in the sun or for a little more money, but you want to be where the hockey is best. And I thought, I don't know. Some of those places like Dallas right now, it's pretty sunny.
Pretty sunny.
Tax pretty low.
Tax pretty low.
Last time I checked, Tampa Bay's on top of the Atlantic. Pretty sunny, tax is pretty low.
What we need to do is to convince all athletes when they are young that snow and cold is awesome. Can we just scare them about skin cancer? Can we do something so that it's not about the sun?
The skin cancer thing is good, but scary.
Yes.
They all love to golf. What if we taught them to curl?
I know. It's so true.
You want to go where the curling is best? Yeah, me and the boys, after we're done at the rink, we're going to head on down to the Bonspiel.
Golf or hockey.
Golf is killing hockey.
Golf is absolutely killing hockey. You know, every hockey player says, yeah, it's great. You know, I can golf year round. Like Jesus. And by the way, your sport, you're on ice and you can't stand the cold. Why'd you pick this profession?
From TSN, the golf guy, Mark, what's his name?
Bob Weeks.
No, not Bob Weeks. His name was Mark.
Mark Sacchino.
That's it.
Mark Sacchino.
Remember he took us to his golf club?
Yes.
You and I?
Yeah, the Hunt Club. Yeah. Love the Hunt Club.
Yeah, and we had no interest in golfing. None.
Oh, no. The Hunt Club, I go there, good wine list and great view. You have view of Lake Ontario. Oh, my God, that was a delight.
How many clubs can you belong to?
I don't know. Again, I'm only a member of one. I'm a member of the National Club.
But I mean, how many could one belong to?
Oh, God. You know, for
yacht
the
club?
Yacht club, golf club.
Social club?
Social, yeah, just a social club.
Tennis club?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Feels like any racket sport has its own club.
I wanted to join the High Park Curling and Tennis Club because I was just looking for a place I could play tennis in the winter, and I was 7,000th on the waiting list.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus. They must be raking it in.
I want to start a tennis club.
Well, the only problem is, do you have a facility? And I'll turn my phone off.
I don't. No, I'll leave it off.
No.
Local charm.
No.
It's really us.
Yeah.
And it's not AI. AI would turn the phone off.
AI would turn the phone off.
So in terms of generational stuff with the NFL, just to put a bow on that conversation, I feel like whoever wins this year, for you, it's bad team or okay team in a down year. For me, it's either the twilight of the idols, if like a Philadelphia wins or Buffalo somehow miraculously pulls through or Baltimore. But I do think that we didn't even mention the Houston Texans, whose defense look good enough to be
contenders
for a long time.
Their defense, like if we're going to rank what are the best units out there, You could do like the Rams passing game, the Bills running game. The Texans defense has to be near the top of that list. It's really good. And CJ Stroud is a good quarterback. And you got him, you got Nico Collins who's back healthy. I can't name you any of their running backs, but no, the Texans could get there.
You know, so it feels like there's just new that's on the horizon. It's the nature of the beast. And maybe, Matt, your Giants.
They are so shit.
If they get the kid from Indiana and it turns out to be good.
Wait, we have Jackson Dart, the dumb. Jackson Dart again. I don't know if you heard. He went to the concussion tent again. And the best part is afterwards, he's like, I don't know why I went there. He's going to be out of the league in 3 years. Yeah, go get the Mendoza. Go get the Indiana quarterback. God, my team sucks. They're so stupid. They're so dumb, dumb team.
Sorry to ruin your Christmas. Leafs.
Yes.
Leafs big to Edmonton, since we were just talking about Edmonton and McDavid. I got a couple Leafs in 6 words. One is Connor McDavid will be a Leaf. I might throw that one out every week just to manifest it into the universe. But here's another one. Let's go 1, 2, 3, 4, since we're on goalie number 4 right now.
And it could be goalie number 5. Admiral Akbar. I don't know how to say that. I forget the guy's
Artur
name.
Artur Akhimov.
Akhimov. That's hard.
He's number 4.
Number. He would be the fifth goalie to start a game for the
Maple Leafs. Right, but he's fourth on the depth chart.
Correct.
Right,
correct.
So
yeah.
I wasn't specific about this, but we've gone through 1, 2, 3, and we landed on 4 this weekend.
Yeah. Oof. I mean, to me, the number one takeaway: Nylander and Tavares and Matthews are not scoring. Certainly, Tavares, he's finally hit the cold stretch that we were expecting. Same thing, Nylander. Of course, Nylander had 2 great assists the other night. But I didn't really notice Austin Matthews that much.
Yeah, 2 shots. I had to double check.
Yeah.
2 shots.
And the worst part is, you know what's creeping in the conversation? Mm. Is Austin Matthews healthy? I don't want to have that again. Like, I don't know if he is or if he isn't.
Creeping in the conversation. It's front-loaded in every conversation. He's clearly not himself and hasn't been since he went into the boards going after goal number 70.
That was 2 years ago.
What, have you seen the last couple of years?
I have. And that, I think, is the number one.
I didn't say he's been ruined. I said he hasn't been himself.
The question is himself going to come back?
Why would it?
I don't know. That's the concern. Is that, maybe he's hit his peak and that's it. And the problem is, if he goes to being, say the 16th best player in hockey, whatever you want to put it
at. If he goes.
Yeah. Okay. He's there now. I know. He is there now. The problem is they don't have enough young talent or other emerging talent to pick up the slack. That's the problem with the Maple Leafs.
The fascinating thing about this team is how we use the word window. It's all based on Austin Matthews. To an extent, on William Nylander, who's a very, very good player, but lots of teams have very, very good players. I don't know that William Nylander is a championship difference maker, unless Austin Matthews is awesome. It's the window is really just Matthews. In the weird way with Edmonton that, we love Draisaitl and he's on the cusp of 1,000 points, but if you took McDavid off that team, that's not a championship team. With him on it, though, and they made it to the cup final twice. So my point is, this team with the Leafs is so interesting because when we talk about championship window, what we really mean is building a team around Austin Matthews. He's no longer that guy.
No.
And I don't foresee a future where he becomes that guy again. To your point, if he's a top 20 player, he is 20, 25, whatever. That's great. That's valuable. It's just not a championship window.
Not if he's, if he's your number one player, you need more talent around him than what you would have when he was at his peak, when he scored 69.
Did you watch McDavid bust up the middle?
Yes.
And he hit 34 kilometers in his skating?
Incredible.
It was just, it was so explosive. It was so decisive. I love that they showed the conversation he had, I guess it was with Kyle Bukauskas before the game. And he looked like he clearly didn't want to be there. He was in town to win. And we never get that from Austin. What disappointed us most about that game wasn't just the 2 shots or he was 43% in the faceoff circle. It was when best was on best, you hate the idea that one guy rolls over the other. It just looks bad.
It does. It's one of our love affairs with sports is when, the guy rises to the occasion. It's Saturday night. It's Connor McDavid over there. You want to put on your best show. And we didn't see it. We didn't see any of it. And we've only had glimpses here and there of Auston Matthews. We're all waiting for it. We're desperate for it. Like he scores a power play goal. Like, oh, that's the proof. There's no proof that he's back. The proof is the exact opposite.
It's a great point about looking for proof, because every time he hasn't been back.
So
every time he scores, people are like, oh, is this the beginning of a tear? He has one good wrist shot over the course of 2 weeks, and everyone's like, that's the release I know from him. I heard that dialogue for 4 or 5 straight days. I can't remember who he scored against, but it was a classic Auston Matthews wrist shot. And everyone's like, oh, he's back. Mm-hmm. Or he looks like he's coming back. He's passing off on opportunities. He seems just a tiny fraction behind where he used to be with his release. And it's just not as explosive as it used to be. It's just not the same guy. Drysdale 3 points. Mm-hmm. Shows up for that game. McDavid 3 points and some unbelievably exciting highlight reel stuff. He shows up for that game. Our guys, Riley, -3. JT, 2 shots, -3. Auston Matthews, 2 shots, 43% in the faceoff circle. Our best guys, and Berube stands up and says, oh, we need to see more from our leaders. But guess what, guy? It's not that. In fact, the team being better over the last little while has largely been goaltending.
Yes.
And the role players have looked better.
Correct. Yeah. And I was sounding the alarm when the team was on that run going, wait a minute. So everyone is saying the main reason they're winning is Wall and then Hildeby. Wall and Hildeby. No one brought up it was anything else. I'm like, well, what happens if Wall or Hildeby are good? Mm-hmm. Can the Leafs win if their goalie is good? Anyone wins when the goalie is great.
I was going to say, every team in the
every
NHL
team
wins when their goalie is really good.
Exactly.
Every single one.
Yes. And what happens when it's a 903 save percentage? Nothing wrong with that. League average is like 899. And the Leafs, you know, aren't doing that much winning. The crazy thing with Matthews, soon people are going to be wondering, will he ever score 40 again? We talked about the cruelty of the NFL. Well, yeah, I mean, it's the cruelty really of sports. You know, a year and a half ago, he's the greatest goal scorer in the league. And now we're like, is he going to score 40 again? Like, that happened really fast.
So right now, the Leafs are sitting 6th in the division, 13th in the conference. They're 5 points behind Montreal, who's sitting in 3rd spot. And ahead of them right now in the standings between them and the 2nd wild card are Philadelphia, Boston, Pittsburgh, New Jersey, New York, and, well, New York Rangers, and Florida. I said that we will find out who they are by New Year's Day, and I stand by that. When you lose games like you did the other night, when you're up and then you give away a third period lead, and they've done that now a couple times in a row, when you're giving away games and winding up in overtime, and you get the loser point, and it looks sort of, you know, that they've been to overtime 9 times this year. They're at about 25% for the year, and they've got, what is it here? I wrote it down. They've got 5 losses in overtime and 4 wins. That's kind of a mark of a team that's just not getting it done.
They're an average team.
You know, like they can limp their way into overtime. They're 500 there, more or less.
They're an average team in an average division, which is weird. Like the Atlantic being this, I could use to be just like, this is big boy hockey. And this year it hasn't been. You know, Tampa, certainly they're the closest facsimile to a truly great team. They're the closest that we have. And the Maple Leafs, they're an average team in an average division. I think we're in line on this. I don't think they're making the playoffs. I don't think they're making the playoffs because I don't see any reinforcements coming. I don't, like, yes, Chris Tanev's going to come back and eventually Brendan Carlo. That'll make a difference. But they don't look like a good team. Like they haven't wowed us. Like, if the only way they're going to go on a long run is if Hildeby has a 962 save percentage, I'm sorry, that's not good enough.
Montreal's goaltending's an issue, but Montreal's team has been better than the Leafs. Mm-hmm. Detroit is in 2nd in the Atlantic. You weren't going to be able to hold these teams down forever. They were shit, and they were accumulating assets, and eventually they were going to get better. And if I had to gamble on a team going on a run, Leafs or Ottawa, I might take the Leafs right now. I might take the Leafs, you know, because I'm not too sure about Ottawa's goaltending, but Ottawa's a much better team than it used to be. Point simply being this, Matt, why do we think that they might not make the playoffs? Because a lot of teams that were shit got better.
Yeah.
You know, Philadelphia's better. Boston somehow miraculously is okay. And double miraculously, Pittsburgh is pretty good, even though they had that weird loss to San Jose over the weekend. But New Jersey is ahead of the Leafs right now. New Jersey's definitely better than the Leafs. So can they do it? Sure. I think we'll know more. They have to go on a run. They have to catch some breaks. But God, this This idea that they're in a championship window, like
no,
I'm not seeing this. Who's seeing this?
When the best thing people have said about the Maple Leafs beyond the goaltending is the division is so bad they can still make the playoffs. When the best praise you can give is that everything is bunched together, that's not good enough. You know, so yeah, I don't think they're a playoff team. And I think it's a step back here. I think it's a step back here for the team. They got to hope that they can hit some wins in the draft.
The controlled burn, Matty. Got to get rid of some assets, keep some of the good ones, and just try to pivot so that you're still a playoff team, but a bit younger and a bit better balanced. You know, I just want a good defenseman. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about this the other day. Do you realize we haven't had a great defenseman? I mean, a truly great defenseman in Toronto since Borya Salming.
That's insane. That's the 70s.
When you actually stop and think about it, like there have been guys along the way who have been quite good, like Thomas Caberlett was quite good, but no one would say he was a great defenseman. You know, McCabe was good. We had some guys in the back end of their careers, like Brian Leetch was good. Phil Housley was really good, but not really as a Leaf. Phaneuf, we hoped, was going to be that guy. And I feel like Phaneuf was, I don't know, I kind of feel like history remembers that guy worse than he was. Because he tried really hard.
And his
partner on the top pair was Keith Ollie. You know, he wasn't really put in a position to win. And he had Carlisle as a coach who kind of shit the bed.
He was set up to fail.
Sure. But the point being, Dion Phaneuf was never going to be Borya Salmi, even in a good situation. And I've said this a million times on the show, but I think all the time about that draft where we took Mitch Marner and a couple slots down, Zach Werenski went. Babcock was pushing for Werenski internally. And what would have looked like this team with all that talent, minus Marner, but sub in Matt, Zach Werenski, with a really good, bona fide number one defenseman back there to build around? It's a bad team have won a championship.
It's a great point about just the bigger picture about the Maple Leafs that they haven't had the great defenseman.
Almost so many.
So in the last like 50, almost 50
years. It's been 50 years since they've had a truly great defenseman.
And
they've had some good defenses, but they were by committee.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They have. And listen, Morgan Rielly is very good. At his best, but he's not great. He's not elite. He's not he's never been one of the best 10 defensemen in the NHL.
Defensively, he's a bit of a sieve.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely he is. And it's almost like the Bears with quarterbacks. They just can't get it right. It's the same thing with the Maple Leafs and
That's
defense.
That's a great point. Actually, it is like the Bears and quarterbacks. They've gone through so many. Jets are there too.
You know, the Bears have never had a 4,000-yard passer. Ever.
Ever?
Ever. The best season ever was like Eric Kramer in 1991. And people are like, well, it's cold. Yeah, I think
Brett. I was going to say, isn't it the weather?
Well, I think Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers managed to crank out 4,000-yard seasons in Green Bay. So I think weather is certainly a factor. Absolutely.
Did you just like D&D nerd me? Well, I think that.
I did. I you know, Bob, I didn't D&D you. I AD&D'd you. I advanced Dungeons and Dragons. Not just Dungeons and Dragons.
Stranger Things, I'm so happy with all. Like, you and I are crazy that we haven't started playing D&D again. Why won't you play?
That'd
be a great DM.
The level of commitment for that, like, I won't even go in more than one fantasy football league.
Yeah, but Matt, think of the fun. If you play D&D with me, uh-huh, I'll drink with you.
I don't know if you can sense this, Bob, but Sandra just shuddered. Whatever she's doing right now, your wife, you know, it was like when Alderaan got blown up and like Obi-Wan Kenobi said
that. The ripple in the force.
Yeah, exactly. Like your wife just even thinking that you might start doing Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, Matt, this isn't even the 10th nerdiest thing I'll do today. I want to talk a little bit about the NBA. Before we do that, I want to do my top five for today. Do you got any wines you want to do today?
Yeah, I got okay, a whole
well,
bunch of
exchange. We'll do like a Christmas exchange here.
Sure.
I'll do a top five, you do a top five.
Sure.
What's your wines?
All right, I'm just pulling it up here.
Well, do you want me to do mine while you're looking?
I got it right here.
Okay.
Top five wines to have at Christmas, and I will go in order from lightest to heaviest. So
now this is that go good with Christmas meal,
yeah,
specifically.
Yes, yeah. We'll start with Henry Appellum Cuvée Catherine. It's a sparkling wine. Sparkling goes with everything, plain and simple. Next, we're going to go to Daubin Estate Riesling. These guys make some of the best Riesling. Riesling also high acidity, so it'll go with all food. Now we're going to go into some reds. Kloss and Chase. I haven't mentioned them before. I haven't given a lot of love for Prince Edward County. Kloss and Chase, single vineyard Pinots. They're gonna run you around $50, but that goes great with turkey. Pinot Noir is a classic one. Now, if you want a big, full-bodied red for the roast, Checkmate Winery in Okanagan. Their Merlot is awesome. Ignore the movie Sideways. Merlot kicks ass. And finally, one of the best for the ice wines, the Chateau de Charme Vidal Ice Wine 2018. Have that at the end of the night. So there are top five wines to have at Christmas, starting from the lightest to the heaviest.
Love that. I'm going to a meal, and it's going to be prime rib.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's a wine I could buy for the table to go with prime rib?
Give me a price. What price are we looking at?
Something like $30 to $40. Something good. You know, but this is a big table, so I might need to get two. Let's call it 30, and I'll buy two bottles.
Southbrook. Southbrook is in Niagara. They do Bordeaux blends very well. Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot and Cab Franc. So they're one of the pioneers, the leaders in all things organic winemaking. Mm-hmm. So you can feel good about the choices you make. Go with Southbrook.
Okay, so I go in and I say, hey, do you have a Bordeaux blend by Southbrook?
Yes.
And they'll hook me up.
They should. I hope they don't. They just stare at you blankly. But no, go with that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Here's my top five. And this is the opposite. If you're not celebrating Christmas dinner, this is the Festivus for the rest of us. Everybody goes to get Chinese food on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
So I thought I would do a top five Chinese foods.
Love it.
All right. Now, before I do my list, I want to say I had to separate dim sum. Because if dim sum was included with everything else, like sit-down Chinese food, it was too expansive. But dim sum is so great. And there's something called har gao, which is the little shrimp dumplings.
Oh, yeah.
I can live on it, honestly. Rice paper filled with stuffing. But even pan-fried turnip is good when it's dim sum. And they bring it in a cart, Matt. It's like a drink cart, but for food.
It's lovely.
It's just perfect. They roll a cart up to the table and say, what would you like? Oh, God, that's what heaven's going to be like. Okay, from five to one. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
Number five, I said hot and sour soup. Now, I love hot and sour soup, but the problem is when it's good, it's the best, but it's often not good. And it's usually a sign, like, is there a, you know, when you look at winemakers, is there a kind of wine that if they get it done right, you know, they probably do everything right? Because that's how I feel about Chinese restaurants and hot and sour soup.
Pinot Noir. It's always the hardest. It's called the heartbreak grape.
Degree of difficulty is up there.
Yes.
If you nail it, everything else is cool.
Yes, exactly.
So hot and sour soup. Number four, barbecue duck.
Surprised that's not higher.
Well, you know, there's some other things, and it was tough, right? Because it's a pretty expansive wish list of Chinese foods here. But one of the things I love about barbecue duck, the cleaver. When you're getting it for takeout and the guy's chopping it up with the cleaver.
Like at the end of Christmas Story. It's smiling. It's smiling.
Wow. It made me think I need a cleaver just for the drama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Chinese broccoli, number three, and garlic sauce. And I throw this out here because you always need to find what's the vegetarian thing to stick next to your five meat dishes.
Of course.
Rice is good, but it's not like a vegetable.
No, that's a cheater vegetable.
Right? So even if they put, you know, little things in the rice, it's still a grain. No, Chinese broccoli. And I don't know why Chinese broccoli is so much better than Western broccoli, but Western broccoli is like a punishment and Chinese broccoli is like a gift from God.
It's true. Broccoli was always wielded as a weapon by parents.
Yeah.
Yes.
Don't make, you know, eat your broccoli.
Eat your broccoli.
Eat your liver.
Right? No one ever goes, eat your Kit Kat bar. Mom, eat your Kit Kat.
Okay, the last two, one is fancy and the other one is not. And I'm going to do the fancy one first, which is lobster and black bean sauce. Oh, the idea that you could take lobster and marinate it in something as delicious as black bean, and that somehow these tastes don't make each other gross, but elevate each other. I can eat lobster and black bean sauce with a little bit of green onion mixed in every day of my life, which brings me to number one, something I did eat every day of my life between the ages of 8 and 13, Cantonese chow mein. Shitty Cantonese chow mein. It has to be delivery. It has to come in one of those aluminum foil tins that you know, you open up and you peel back the edges.
And the sauce is coming out. Like you, it's going to make a mess.
And you have to eat it in your pajamas, in the fridge, with a fork, out of the tin.
It tastes so much better that way.
I don't know why. You don't even need to heat it up. Is it congealed cold? Sure it is.
Sure.
Doesn't matter.
That's a great list.
Thank you.
No arguments with any of it. You're right. You need the broccoli there, to make yourself feel better. And you're right with your number one. Even with my pro-duck agenda, I still agree with your number one.
Well, you're a big degree of difficulty guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so vegetables at a meal where there's five or six entrees and they're all delicious meats, The vegetable can easily be overshadowed, often is. So what's going to be able to stand up against that kind of onslaught?
It's like having a small role in an Ocean's 11 movie. How, you know, you still need to try to find
Elliot
a way.
Gould.
Yeah,
it's Elliot Gould, it,
there
Ocean's
it is.
11.
There it is. It's often been said.
Take that, Dave Damischek.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, I want to let you cook on this one, and maybe we'll roll this one out, because OKC loses to San Antonio. Close game, right down to one bucket. That now puts OKC at 24-2 and 2 on the year. And San Antonio in the very interesting position of being quite good, and that's even without Wemby. But when Wemby stepped in 20 minutes, he had 22 points, 9 boards. But more importantly, or I should say in 21 minutes, they were plus 21. They were minus 22 when he wasn't in the game.
The only thing, like, it's funny, if you're OKC, you better win now. You better win now.
Because he's coming.
Because he's coming. The only thing, and this is the most Captain Obvious point, Victor Wembanyama's health is the number one on-court basketball issue for the next decade. Mm-hmm. Is Victor Wembanyama healthy? Because I saw the Spurs with an impressive win over the Lakers, where all the Lakers played and there was no Wembanyama, but all the guards, Castle and Fox and I'm forgetting one of the other guards,
Devin Vassell,
all play together. It's
who had 23 points against the Thunder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all about just the health of Victor Wembanyama now.
So let's do OKC to begin, because the only team that's had a better start is 25-1 for Golden State back in 2015-16.
That was such a fun team.
It is. But we don't seem to hold the OKC Thunder in quite the same reverence. If they played in New York, if they played in Chicago, if they even played in Miami, how would we look at this team?
It would be front page every day. It absolutely would be. The problem is that, A, and we know the reasons. One, you're in Oklahoma City. You're going to get less attention. B, they're not flashy. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the best player in the NBA.
He's up there with Will Chamberlain now for consecutive 20-point games.
Exactly. He's incredibly efficient, but there's nothing flashy about his game. There's nothing that catches your eye.
You know what's amazing about watching him is you always think, when's he going to heat up? And then you realize he has 30 points.
Yeah. It's almost unfair. And then what's the trademark for this team? Depth and defense. Those things aren't as sexy. You know, they don't jump out as much to the casual fan.
But 24-2.
It's incredible.
It's incredible.
It really is. And
that's at a time when Denver is really good.
Uh-huh.
And we said the Spurs are rising and Houston's really good.
Yep. The Lakers have surprised everyone.
So they're 24-2 in a conference that is about 11 times better than the other conference. It's not like they're the Eastern team and the Detroit Pistons are 20-5 and you go, yeah, but you know, they're beaten up. You know, basically teams that are staffed in livestock at this point.
I feel bad for the West. You know, just
because
like,
you can be the best, you can be the sixth best team in the West and be the first best team in the East.
Absolutely. Like right now, the Knicks are probably the best team in the East, and you know, the Knicks would not have home court in the first round if they were in the West. If you just look at the,
which is what makes what they're doing, Oklahoma City, what they're doing is so incredible because their conference has never been better, and they aren't just leading the conference. You know, they've got like a 900 winning percentage.
It's insane. Yeah, it's a good point. Going back to degree of difficulty, you shouldn't be this good in the West.
They lost to Portland.
Mm-hmm. They lost to Portland.
Which is just one of those weird nights. And they lost to the Spurs by one bucket. They're beating everybody on their court, on the visitor court. Like, it is so incredible. And if there was ever an argument for the Coastal Elite and the biases of the Coastal Elite,
it's that right there.
It's this right here.
Yep, 100%.
And when it was Golden State, you couldn't turn around on ESPN.com and not find an article about Durant or Curry or whatever. I realize that OKC isn't like a sexy team, even like to your point, how they play, but they kind of are. Chet Holmgren has a lot of, you know, sass.
You're trying, Bob. I feel bad, but there isn't. Like with that Golden State team, long range shooting just attracts your attention. Crazy athleticism and dunks attracts your attention.
San Francisco attracts our attention.
The
Coastal.
Yes. Oh, no, no. That's absolutely part of it. I would say it's, you can argue which one it's more. Is it geography or is it style of play? Like basically, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the greatest mid range player. But you know what's not sexy? Proper footwork. And that's what Shai Gilgeous-Alexander does better than anyone else.
Fundamentals.
Yeah. There is no fun in fundamentals.
There really isn't. I've made it a New Year's, and this is probably going to doom them to failure, but I've made it a New Year's resolution to champion the OKC Thunder. Not that they need my help.
No.
But it seems like if we don't, then we're going to be rushing on the bandwagon when they're 35-2, and everyone's going to be talking about them. We'll be like, yo, like Bill Murray and Stripes, I've been listening to Tito Puente for years.
Oh, that's a good poll.
Thank you.
Oh, that's a good poll. Maybe when the NFL's done, you know, then there'll be more eyes will go over to whatever OKC is doing. They certainly deserve a lot more attention.
You know, when LA is a train wreck, which is always, that's always, you know, it absorbs a lot of attention. The fact that it's a LeBron train wreck, even more so. The Knicks are really good. That obviously is going to keep the New York media happy. And they are really good.
Yeah,
they are really good. I actually think you underestimate them, maybe in comparison to the West. I think they're as good as, you know, they would be top four in the West.
We could debate that. We have literally 2 minutes left.
Okay, well, let's wrap up. We're going to do something a little different for the remainder of the shows this year. I think we're going to do a lot of top fives.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to record them all in one shot and then roll them out over the holidays so you and I can get to our holiday festivities.
There is a lot of duck and a lot of shrimp to be eaten.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.